This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and to find your next favorite artist or band. This is FUV Live Sessions with Katie Gavin. I'm Megan Oftermat, and I'm here with host Alisa Ali at WFUV. Alisa, this is Katie Gavin's solo project. It is really beautiful. Talk to me about what is different about having her here at FUV as a solo artist as opposed to her work with her band, Muna.
Well, this is a more introspective album, and it's been something that she's been working on for a long time, for like 7 years. And you can hear the difference in sound. I feel like Katie's music on her own is, there's some different layers to it. It's very apples and oranges, and they're both great fruits. So, you know, if you feel like dancing and having a great time with your friends, then you put on Muna. If you feel like doing some stuff around the house, if you feel like just you're going rogue, you're going solo, you're going on a solo adventure, then this one is the one for you. And again, they're both great and they both serve different purposes and they're both really important and both beautiful.
She played three gorgeous songs for us. What are we going to hear first in this session?
First, we're going to start off with some casual drug use.
Tomorrow, but if I don't,
Katie Gavin in Studio A at WFUV. What a relief. Mm-hmm. I'm Elise Ali here with Katie after a great performance of Casual Drug Use from her solo debut, What a Relief. What a great title for your debut album. Congratulations. And tell me about what a relief it is to finally have this out.
Hi, Elise. Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here. It has been a relief in the sense of I've kind of wondered for a couple of years if I was going to have the chutzpah to take this venture out on my own and to put these songs out in the world. And it's been really nice to share them with people and kind of show this other part of myself that is important to me.
When you first started thinking about music as a career or seriously, did you always want to be in a band first, or did you picture yourself as a solo artist?
I think I probably first pictured myself as a solo artist, but then I learned over time that I function better in a band and I really prefer doing it with my best friends. I do think that like in this day and age, it's rare to see bands. I think part of that is like just the economic state of the music industry, but also we have this like big emphasis on individualism in terms of like social media and like gaining popularity. So it was kind of, I don't think we really realized it at the time, but it was kind of like a countercultural choice to be like, we're going to do it with our friends. And ultimately it makes so many of the hard things like so much more worth it. Yeah. So it is funny. Like, I'm glad I'm doing this, but it is harder to do it on your own. And I prefer doing
a band.
It with my friends.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But ultimately, like, I'm beholden to the songs. I'm glad that the songs are out. And yeah, but I miss them.
But speaking of, you actually did not come alone and you did have a friend in the studio with you.
So, yes, good point.
So let's give a shout out.
Absolutely. So Nana Ajoa is an amazing musician who's been playing the songs with me on this solo tour and opening for me on the tour. So she's working a double shift. Yeah. And it's been a blessing. Like, we have a little crew. There's four of us and Frankie Teven, who's Muna's tour manager as well. And then Max is running sound, and it's really nice to have, like, you know, no matter what, when you tour, you have a, like, a little family. But yeah, Nana is really, really talented, and we met kind of by happenstance. She was working in the studio at my producer Tony Berg's studio when I came in to record, and ended up recording on the record because so many of her instincts are just like right in line with what I was looking for the record, and just my little blessing.
And you mentioned Tony Berg as your producer, and that was a person that was suggested to you by Phoebe, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Phoebe Bridgers, obviously.
Phoebe Bridgers.
Your friend.
Yes.
And the label person.
Yeah, my boss. I mean, she gets annoyed. She's like, I'm not actually your boss, but we like calling her our boss.
The boss. The jefe.
Yeah, she's our A&R person. And
oh, nice.
It's kind of amazing to have her as an A&R. And yeah, she had a lot of good insight for this record, but Tony is like one of the main producers that she works with. And I think she felt very rightly that he would be well suited for the album because he really works in making kind of familiar songs sound like unfamiliar and new. And I really work in a very like within a very established songwriting structure. Like, I like folk chords. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing anything too crazy.
Right.
But I think he added a lot to the record.
The new record does sound very different from Muna, although there
Thank
is...
Thank you. I got nervous that people would like hear the songs and be like...
This is a Muna record.
Right.
And then your bandmates were like, we didn't have to do anything. That was easy.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that people find it to be different, because otherwise it's like, why are you doing this?
Right. Talk about why they are different to you. Because you did a lot of these songs, you did present to Muna.
Yeah, yeah.
But they just didn't seem to quite fit.
Right, yeah. I think the way I've come to understand it now is kind of a question of, like, scalability. I think Muna has become a project that, I mean, we were always very ambitious, like, from the jump. But we were really interested at the time when we started the band. It was, like, 2014. And we were kind of like, how big of a pop band can, like, three queers make? And so if songs feel like the things I'm discussing in them, like, are like big enough and universal enough, we just know it when we feel it. Like, if it makes sense for like kind of like the size rooms that we're playing now. And there's a lot of songs on the solo record that just feel kind of more like measured and nuanced and frankly, like domestic. It's in a way like this is a record that ended up being about like the person that I am when I'm just at home and not in a rock band.
Well, let's get to another live track. And I think this is a great song to kind of bridge between your band, and you already know what song I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, I do.
Yes. It's Aftertaste, which is a great bridge from Muna to the solo. What a relief. I love this title. And this is such a fun song, and we'll talk about it on the other side of the performance. So Katie Gavin, live in Studio A at WFUV with Aftertaste.
My hair got long, your hair got cut. You wear the same old sweater. It's good to see you. We're catching up. We're talking about the weather. And I'm the empress in my new clothes. And I think that you must know. And you're taking pity on me. Pretending you don't see. I feel naked when you look my way. You can see it on my face. You're the only reason I came here. You're the only reason I stay here. And I'm living on the aftertaste. Don't you tell me it's too late. You're the only reason I came here. You're the only reason it's so. Just taking pity. Then you say to me, I feel naked when you look my way. You can see it on my face. You're the only reason I came here. You're the only reason I stay here. And I'm living on the aftertaste. Don't you tell me it's too late. You're the only reason I came here. You're the only reason it's so clear to me.
Live version of Aftertaste here in Studio A at WFUV. That's off Katie Gavin's new record, What a Relief. And what a great performance of Aftertaste. I'm so struck by your singing. It is just so out of sight.
Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about this song and, you know, its importance in your canon?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're very right to say that this song is like a bridge between Muna and the solo record. This was the song that was like, we were considering it the most as a Muna song. And I ended up just saying, like, I do, at the end of the day, need a single for my solo record. So I'm going to take it.
Sorry, you can't have it,
I'm
going to
take it. But yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of exploration on this record of like different forms of love and depictions of like realistic love. And that interests me a lot. Aftertaste is really not that. It's just like your kind of run-of-the-mill like fantasy crush song. And sometimes I just like to do that.
It's so fun.
Yeah. I mean, it was based off of kind of a real event where I just realized I had only gone to this concert pretty much because I was thinking that this one specific person might be there. But yeah, then I just like made up the second half of the song, you know, and we run away.
Yeah.
Into the sunset together.
That is so fun.
It is so fun.
I love thinking about doing that.
I probably will never stop.
Will we ever actually do that?
Yeah. Well, will we run off into the sunset? Yes. You and me? I don't know. We just
met. All right, buy me a drink first.
I have this like kind of recurring thought in my head when I get into that space of like, do happy endings exist? I try to make it a spiritual practice to like fall in love with like the desire itself. Like the yearning itself is kind of a nice experience to have. And so maybe that's enough.
I know that when you bring a song to Muna, mm-hmm. and they're like, nah, we're not going to use that. You know, hard feelings, right? Or are there?
No. Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time that we've been together as a band. When we started and I was like 20 years old, I think I was a lot less emotionally mature. We all still have moments where like sometimes we take stuff personally. The creative process is so vulnerable. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you're still a little kid being like, I made this. Like, yeah. Do you like it? Yeah. And but I do think like really own at this point that like songwriting is my profession and I will continue to do it. I went to see Kacey Musgraves in Nashville the other night and she compared songwriting to fishing. And she was like, sometimes it makes sense. Just okay. Wait. She was like, you know, you're not really in control of like what you're going to reel in on any given day. I'm just not really in control of what I end up with. But having a solo project has been really healthy for me in terms of knowing that there's a space where I can still like give love to songs that I think are good, but just don't have a home with Muna. Like there's something important about still putting those songs out into the world and having other people have interactions with them.
And you have that. It's good to have that sounding board with your friends, mm-hmm. on, you know, what kind of aesthetic you want for, you know, the project.
Yeah.
But then how do you do it when it's solo? So how do you know with your songs, like, does
right.
this make the cut or not if it's yours?
I mean, I still need a community, right? Like, this whole project kind of started with two of my other friends from college. Similar vibe, like my friend Scott and Eric, we would be on a text chain. They kind of got invested in these songs and they started working on arrangements of them during the pandemic. So yeah, I've always been very reliant on like feedback from people around me, but whether it's like friends like that I'm texting or I'm showing songs to my sisters or Phoebe and Tony, like I'll take stuff in. And when we actually sat down to record this album, I played Tony like 40 demos and we like whittled it down to 12 songs from there. But yeah, I need other people.
Yeah. On the other side of that, when do you just say, all right, thank you for your opinion.
Right.
But I'm the jefe here and I'm going to make this decision.
Yeah. I have a really hard time with that. Yeah. So I guess my answer to that would be like as rarely as possible is when I do that. But
okay.
But sometimes you do have to do that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
To just get a project finished.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on this project. It is so good. I love this record. And you described it as like, what did you say? Lilith Fair core.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go to Lilith Fair?
No, I think I just kind of missed it. I'm trying to think of when the big years were for it. I was probably like 5 or 6, but it really influenced like everything I listened to growing up. And in the last year, I've like come into contact with a lot of the people who played Lilith Fair and like have been idols for me. So yeah,
like
Sarah McLachlan. It's been really special. The Indigo Girls, I played with them at the Greek, and I'm...
You should bring back Lilith Fair.
That's what I think, too.
I think you should spearhead this project and bring it back.
Are you hearing this, my manager? People want this. You're not the only one who said this.
People want it. People need it right now.
Yeah,
for sure. Let me tell you one last thing before I let you go, because I know you have to go. But I am always looking for more female musicians and female identifying musicians. And I get a lot of submissions for music. They're predominantly from white men.
Mm.
Why do you think, and what can we do to get a more diverse musicians out there?
The first thing that comes to mind for me is like something that like I'm the part of as well. I think that there's not a lot of class diversity in like people that are making music. I think you generally have to have a certain amount of privilege to like be able to pursue art in America right now. It's very like few and far between that you'll find someone who's like risen above their circumstances somehow to find a career in the arts. So I think that's something that's really top of mind. But then also culturally, I know I myself experienced, like, my bandmates and I, we don't all identify as women. So the language we kind of use is like people of marginalized genders. I wish there was a less clunky way to say that, but anybody of a marginalized gender, I think we are really socialized to think that we need to be perfect at what we're doing before we like put ourselves out there. We just hold ourselves internally to such a higher standard versus maybe if you're a white guy, you're like, yeah, I absolutely should submit my music because I'm a genius. I just say that because I experienced that definitely, like growing up, like just waiting a really long time until I realized like, oh, I can produce my own music. So I think that's part of what we wanted to do with Muna was just show people like, hey, you can actually do it on your own.
Yeah.
But a lot of stuff needs to change.
A lot of stuff does need to change. But representation matters. So thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And I really appreciate you coming to WFUV. We love your music with your band. And this new solo record is so great. We're going to be inconsolable when you leave.
I see what you did there.
And you are going to play us out with that song from the new album, What a Relief. Katie Gavin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stay with me and we'll fall asleep. I was sitting on the couch and I put my hood up. Couldn't let it be, couldn't let you see. If I could have done better, then you know I would have. Wanna say it first, but I don't. Describe. to be helped. Yeah, we're from a whole huddle of assholes, full of bits where nobody cuddled. We don't know how to be helped. I've seen baby lizards running in the river when they open their eyes, even though no one taught them how or why. Maybe when you kiss me, I can let you see me cry. If we keep on about a feeling, we can get by. If we keep on about a feeling, we can get by.
That was Katie Gavin performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Katie for joining us in our studio and to Satisfactory Records. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and Zach Tomasi. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producer for this episode was Simone Yanez. Megan Aftermat is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Alisa Ali.